Oh, the gospel will overcome in a world full of sorrow, by evil overrun, where darkness is veiled, the light of the sun. We know that the gospel overcomes.
You're listening to The Dean's List, an analysis of news, culture, and theological trends from a biblical worldview. This is your place for intelligent conversation on the relevant issues of our day, each Friday and Saturday at 11:30 and each Sunday at noon. And now, here's the host of The Dean's List, Dr. Paul Dean.
All right, welcome into The Dean's List. Now, I got to let you know, I'm flying solo today, and that's unusual for me. Not that, I don't like it or can't necessarily handle it, but I love to have folks sitting in the studio with me. Just easier to dialogue, easier to talk to someone, and then people can calm me down, Gary, and keep me on track, and, maybe say things that are helpful while I'm off on some kind of a tear. So my faithful producer, Gary Miller, is here, and there may be a time you're going to need to jump in.
Okay.
All right?
To calm you down.
Exactly.
Help you out.
That's right.
Make you even madder.
Well... I hope not. I try to not become angry, but sometimes I do. I work myself up, and that's the problem. That's why we need the Lord Jesus Christ to put down sin in our hearts. And...
You did on Friday. You were getting on a roll Friday. You were getting a little – there was some warmth coming this
there
way.
There was some warmth. That's right. Yeah, and speaking of Friday, I was in here with Christy, and we were talking about, I got off on a lot of things. But ostensibly, I was trying to talk about attitude among Christians in the aftermath of these awful, awful attacks in Paris and how we should think about it, how we should respond. And, of course, I'm going to be speaking not only to Christians in general, but to pastors and then even moving out from that to political leaders. And so that's kind of where I was going. It's sort of a roundabout discussion. The clock wound down on us right in mid-sentence almost, and so I thought, we're going to come back and try to, finish that discussion up. Well,
yes.
We'll never finish it up, but we're going to continue it. How about that?
Well, that would be good, because I thought in the conversation as you're going forward, somebody might be listening and say, well, this man is thinking that we should never go to war.
Mm-hmm.
He's a pacifist, obviously, and he doesn't want anything to do with war. That's how he's going to handle everything. But
right. You
said that's not the case.
Right.
So how do we handle a situation where we've got terrorists attacking us, and how do we stop that?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's part of what I want to deal with. In fact, let me try to deal with that a little bit right now since you asked it, because I have a tendency to talk about 20 minutes and never come back. Obviously, when terrorists attack, you want to try to find out who those terrorists were and are. Now, in this case, some of them, I don't know what happened to all of them. I guess most of them are dead now in this particular case.
From the Paris attack?
The Paris attack, yeah.
I think most of them
were. Yeah, they killed themselves or they were somehow killed in the response. And then there are other terrorists that have been rooted out since then. And they have been dealt with one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. And it seems to me, if you go back even to 9/11, I was in favor then, I'm in favor now, of seeking out Osama bin Laden is dead now, but the point being, at the time, let's seek him out, let's seek out those involved, and let's bring about justice. Now, I wouldn't be in favor of merely targeting someone we think was involved for assassination and dropping a drone on him. I don't think that. But you do need to go after those who perpetrated the crime, those who are involved. I think that's a very different thing than invading a nation like Iraq and starting a war that we've been in for, over 10 years now, and all of the death that's ensued, and not only death in the Middle East of innocent bystanders, but American soldiers. I'm concerned for American soldiers, and I'm concerned for others. And then, of course, all of these things that we're experiencing regardless of your political position, you can call it blowback, or you can call it revenge. You can call it response. You can call it whatever you want. But this back and forth, obviously now we're in a back and forth kind of situation. So anyway, I'll say more about it as I go, because I've got a piece I want to read some quotes from that's going to address that very issue. And you know, anyway, it doesn't involve just indiscriminate bombing. I don't think that's the way we handle it. Go after specific individuals, but not just invade countries. Regime change ought to be done away with. That's another thing that we need to do. If we would cease our policy of regime change, quit meddling where we have no business meddling, and that's part of what I'm going to get to, if we would quit putting our boots on the ground on sacred soil. Listen, we have to understand, everybody said this, Gary, we have to understand our enemy. That's exactly right. And I don't think we do. If we do, we don't act like we do for political purposes. I don't know what the deal is. But they're a religious group, and they hold to things religiously, and they're not going to think in what we might consider irrational. I mean, suicide bombers, is that irrational or what? That's irrational.
Sure.
But it's a religious thing. And so you're not going to change their mind, right? And I think that's what a lot of folk are saying. But if it's a religious thing, we have to understand that part of the religious thing is that we are dogs, we are infidels, and you know, part of where we were coming from on the last broadcast, where we closed out, you know, someone, see, this is what I do. I got to bring in all these things and answer the question. Someone had, let me tie these two together. I think I can do it. Facebook, Christian brother, put a picture of the mushroom cloud, atomic bomb explosion. Ever since September of 1945, we have made peace with Japan. Okay, the implication is we made peace by dropping a bomb on them. It's time we made peace with Islam. Let's drop a big bomb on them. We'll have peace. All right. So then my daughter Christy responded by talking about how heartbreaking that was, and she had some things to say. We didn't get into that. But then someone responded to her. Now, they've seen that this is a Christian. They've seen the picture. But their response is, well, we can't just, you know, settle this thing by being, she didn't say pacifist, but she mentioned that, like, and this is what you were bringing up a moment ago. Can't just settle this thing by being missionaries. What about Nazis? If we just sent missionaries, you know, they'd have died for the cause of Christ, but they wouldn't have stopped the Nazis. Okay. So I start off by making the point that, well, Nazi Germany, you know, they took power. You know, they had a government. They had a governmental leader, Adolf Hitler. And so Hitler decides to take Germany into war. And in 19, I don't even know the dates, 37 somewhere, you know, he topples Poland, or he invades Poland. He's marching, and okay? Anyway, so we end up in the war for other reasons, but the bottom line is we know who the enemy is. We know what they're after. There's a conventional war. We push them back. America wins, and now Germany is a peaceful country, and we have peaceful relations with Germany, the whole deal. All right? Well, you come back. See, now I forgot where I was going earlier. I was going to tie it into what I was saying.
Well, now we've got a different situation.
Now we have a different enemy.
We don't have just a country. We've
That's right.
got a religion.
That's right. Thank you. So now we have a different kind of enemy. And what I was addressing is the fact that this individual said the Islam and Germany, Nazi Germany, you know, they were after the same thing. And I said, well, they're not necessarily after the same thing, because you don't see Islam marshaling an army and invading countries. They're not doing that. And see, now hang on. They do have a goal, and I'm coming back to it. But this is one of my points that, you know, there is no one in the Middle East, whether you're talking pre-9/11 or post-9/11 or even today, Syria, Iraq, Libya, there is no one in the Middle East that poses a threat to the United States of America in the sense that they're going to marshal an army and invade us and take over. It cannot happen at this point in time. Now, of course, there are a lot of terrorist attacks now, and we are susceptible to terrorism now. That's true. So that's an issue. That's a problem. That's what we're talking about. How to deal with it.
Right.
Part of dealing with it is knowing why it occurs, what started it. Can we back up the tape somehow, some way, get back to where we were? But see, this is a religious deal for them. So their goal, yes, is world conquest. All right, but they're willing, on the one hand, they're willing to take the long view. They're willing to take 1,000 years, unlike Nazi Germany, unlike, you know, the United States of America or whoever else. They're willing to bide their time on the one hand. So they're happy to have little terrorist attacks here and there to make their point and whatever else is going on. But not only do they take the long view, they don't really get involved in going somewhere else and perpetrating a terrorist attack unless somebody is perpetrating war against them on their soil. That the ground is sacred over there. And so the fact that we put 500,000 troops over there in 1990 is a problem. And they had forgotten that. Now, the fact that we topple regimes, the fact that we're, you know, deposing one dictator and allowing another. See, they don't like that. Now, that brings up another issue, and I started in on this in the last broadcast. And I'm just using the most recent example. Let's say we topple Assad. Who's going to replace him? We don't have a plan. There's no, you know, as one writer I read said, there's no Thomas Jefferson kind of, you know, individual waiting out there to take over. The fact is, we don't know who's going to take over, and that's what happens. You know, you topple one dictator, and another one comes to power who's even worse and creates different kinds of problems. And see, what we're dealing with is religious fanaticism over there. And honestly, if we weren't sticking our nose in their business, they wouldn't be coming over here attacking us like they are. Again, they don't attack us because of our values and because of our freedom. Over the long haul, they might want to defeat us because of those things. That's not where they're attacking us right now. They're attacking us right now because we're over there meddling in their affairs. All right? Does that mean I'm defending them? No. I'm saying we need to know what the reason is, what's happening, and what the solution is. And part of the solution is a non-interventionist foreign policy in the Middle East. Does that mean pacifism? No. Does that mean isolationism? No. But it means non-interventionism. Quit invading other countries and imposing our will with our military might. That's what it means. All right. I guess we'll talk more about it after the break. I even forgot your original question, but I got some other stuff I want to deal with, and I'm going to issue a call specifically to Christians. I'm not just trying to talk about what's going on in the Middle East, but I do want to issue a call to Christians, and in particular Christian ministers, and I'll tell you what I mean by that in just a moment. Stay tuned.
Parents helping their kids by looking in their phones.
They have a right to pick up their phone and look in it. You know, I have a lot of parents that are like, well, that would be invasion of privacy. And I'm like, no, it's not. It's so you know what's going on, but even more so, let him know that you're doing that.
Join Vicki Piazzi of Shepherd's Hill Family Coaching next time on Licensed to Parent.
Licensed to Parent every Monday at 11 on Christian Talk 660 and 92.9.
If you're over 50 and concerned about any of the following, stay tuned for an exclusive free bottle offer. Are you concerned about your heart health? Are you interested in healthy brain function? What about joint comfort? Well, if you answered yes to any of these questions, we want to send you a free bottle of Krill Omega 50 Plus. Krill Omega 50 Plus combines krill oil with ultra-pure fish oil in one tiny pill, and it promotes your joint health, your heart health, your arteries, brain function, and even your eye health. Best of all, you can get a free bottle of Krill Omega 50 Plus today. Just pay for shipping, and we'll send you a free bottle. Experience the miracle of Krill Omega 50 Plus. Call now for your free bottle. 1-800-340-5763. That's 1-800-340-5763. 1-800-340-5763. Again, call now. 1-800-340-5763.
It was my choice, his choice, their choice, our choice. I felt I had no other choice. Afterward, there was only sorrow and regret. I felt there was no hope. Where could I turn? Who would understand? Then I heard there was a safe place where I could share my grief, guilt, pain, and find recovery. Call Abortion Recovery Assistance of Piedmont Women's Center at 864-244-1434. It is confidential, loving, and supportive.
You're listening to Christian Talk 660.
You know, that's Creedence Clearwater. Let me just make a comment about that song. Have you ever seen the rain coming down on a sunny day? You know, John Fogerty says that he wrote that song because one of the band members was leaving and he was sad and all that. And you know, I guess that's true. I guess he said that. At least that's what I've heard. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a fact, but, you know, if he said it, then I suppose it's true. But that song, among, you know, a number of other songs, became a war protest song, and the rain became a metaphor for war. Now, who did that and how? And you know, I don't know, but these are the things, Gary, that happen over time. So I'll always think of that song as one of those. You know, the rain coming down on a sunny day. It's beautiful out here. It's quite, but the bombs are raining, and it's a tragic thing. And then CCR had another song. I think we played it last Friday. Who'll stop the rain? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I'm asking. If Christians aren't involved, who's going to stop the rain? Listen, I've got so much on my mind. This is why I get so off track and go around the bend and never make all of the points. But I guess I'll just throw a couple of things, because all of these things need to be elaborated upon at length. But you may have heard of the term neoconservatism. You know, we say certain people are neocons. Now, whether we mean that just by way of label or whether we mean that in a pejorative sense, I don't want to be pejorative, but sometimes I am. I'm a sinner. At the same time, it's not always wrong to, you know, point out something like that and mean it in a pejorative way and be in sin. I think I've mentioned on a previous broadcast, you know, the Lord Jesus called people names, you know, vipers, things like that. The Apostle Paul did, said things that in out of context could be considered very ugly. But I don't want to be ugly. I don't want to dishonor the Lord. But neoconservatism, it is a political philosophy. And again, I'm going to do a whole broadcast on it, but just basically, it arose in the 1960s. And it was essentially in the beginning, it was Democrats, and Democrats are more liberal, obviously, than conservatives in terms of social issues and things of that nature. But it was a bunch of Democrats who were dissatisfied with American foreign policy, and they wanted a more interventionist foreign policy. They wanted to exert our power across the globe. They felt like, and you've heard this term, American interest. You know, and I heard, I can't remember who it was today. Maybe it was Trump. And it's surprising. He's changed his tone lately. You know, Trump was talking about before, you know, he was talking about let Putin fight over there in the Middle East and Russia and let those guys fight each other. And, you know, we don't necessarily need to send our boys over there. And that's exactly right. Now, of course, in the aftermath of Paris, Trump's, you know, trumpeting a very different tune. You know, I will bomb the you-know-what out of ISIS. And, you know, anyway. Of course, that's... you know, a response, I guess he might say. I don't know what he would say. It's all politics. Doesn't matter. But anyway, neoconservatism. So the idea is that we have American interest, however you want to define that, and we're going to go protect those interests. And we're going to do it with our military might. And so we intervene in the affairs of other countries. We invade. We promote regime change. We do all of these things. Well, so these neocons became Republicans, and they have, and I'm going to, you know, this is not some conspiracy theory when I use this word, but they have infiltrated the Republican Party. And now, of course, in one sense, they've taken over the Republican Party. What I mean like that, like they just went in there and booted some folk out. No, this is just what Republicans have become. And this is why it's called neoconservatives. They weren't really conservatives back in the 60s. They were Democrats who wanted an interventionist foreign policy. And there are a number of Republicans they became Republicans and they wielded influence. And over the years, more and more Republicans became neoconservative. And that's the philosophy. And so now, of course, you got Republicans who are sort of conservative socially. And I guess some of them are over the top, but I'm talking about the neocons. And by the way, well, I'll mention some names in a minute. But you have people that, well, Marco Rubio, he's a neocon. All right? That's just a fact. Ted Cruz, George Bush the second, you know, W, the Bush the younger. Now, I want to say something about W. Everybody today, you know, wants to channel Ronald Reagan. Those who want to sort of say, well, we're not establishment. See, everybody knows the establishment are neocons. Jeb, he's a neocon. Kasich, he's a neocon. Whoever else. I can't even remember who's on the ticket. Ben Carson's a neocon. I mean, but why? Interventionist foreign policy. Protecting our interests across the globe. But see, everybody wants to channel Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan wasn't necessarily a neocon. In fact, he wasn't. He was a populist, but he wasn't a neocon. In fact, Ronald Reagan used our military force only three times, if I'm not mistaken, if my memory doesn't fail. And it's not like I'm remembering way back then. I'm talking about the history that I've read recently. Obviously, he went into Grenada, but, you know, he was in and out. And you remember some American students were in danger there, and there was a coup there or something. I can't remember all the details, but he got in, he got out. He sent troops, I guess, in what, Gary, was it Lebanon? But that's a decision that he regretted.
It was a Marine base.
Yeah, and there was a terrorist attack there in Beirut, and 200 and some odd Marines killed there. I forget the name of the ship they were on, but anyway. He regretted his decision till his dying day of sending troops there. And then, forgive me, because I'm not good at this. I'm a preacher, okay? But there was one other time he used military force.
Libya,
thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I remember that. Gaddafi was acting up. Wow. He went in, did what needed to be done, got out. He didn't depose Gaddafi, right? Gaddafi wasn't killed until Obama. I mean, we didn't, you know, promote regime change. Regime change was not part of Reagan's policy. Now, I guess you could say, well, he did give arms to rebels in Nicaragua and all that, but it wasn't for regime change, and it wasn't direct intervention. And I'm not saying it was right or wrong. Well, that's another story for another time. I'm just saying. So George Bush, the first Bush, H.W., Herbert Walker, he was not a neocon either. Now, he wasn't exactly Ronald Reagan, and he was a disaster in a lot of other ways compared to Ronald Reagan. All right, we all understand that. But he had neocon advisors. That's the problem. You had Baker. Was Cheney part of it? Anyway, I know Baker specifically. There are others. Again, the problem is my memory is failing me. But they convinced him that we needed to go into... Am I in the first half or the second half of this show?
Second half. Second half.
This is crazy. It's my fault, too. Where's Christy to help me? Anyway, long story short, they convinced him, you know, that we needed to have the Gulf War. That's when he put 500,000 troops on the ground over there. We pushed Saddam back to Baghdad. Now, listen, even though that was a huge mistake to even go in there because they were no threat to us, and everybody will say, well, what about them invading Kuwait? Look, if you look over there, you had all this territory, and it was basically divided up between these three groups, the Sunnis, the Shiites, the Kurds, and they're all infighting and all that. And listen, this requires going way back further into history, and I don't have time. Obviously, I'm in the second half. But there was an arbitrary line drawn by, I guess it was the British. Anyway, Kuwait was barely a country at the time. And they were slant drilling. They were drilling oil, and they were drilling on, you know, their land, but then slant drilling, you know, supposedly under the line into the oil fields of, what is it, Ramallah. And so Saddam gets mad, and that's why he sends the troops over there. Listen, this is not our fight. Okay, besides all that, getting off track, just saying we had no business going over there. But what happened? Oh, and even Bush won. Once he pushed Saddam back, Saddam Hussein, he refused to march into Iraq and take him down. This is my point. See, even he did not have a policy of regime change. And everybody wanted to know, including me at the time. Now, I'm going to tell you another attitude I had. But by then, my attitude was, why don't we go in there and get Saddam? This is why I know how Christians are thinking today. I know. I wore the T-shirt with the coalition flags on it. Gulf War, America, I mean, the whole bit. But he didn't do it. And he didn't do it because he knew there were larger things at stake, and regime change is not good policy. But what happened was what he did was so successful. I mean, the Republican Guard fled. By the way, the Republican Guard, there are many Republican Guards who were alive then who are now part of ISIS. Hello, they remember. And the reason they're attacking us is not because we dance. They're attacking us because of our intervention in their affairs. That's why. But anyway, it was so successful, all of a sudden you had major adherents who came around to the neocon way of thinking. Remember, neoconservatism, interventionist foreign policy. Now come forward, fast forward to W, when he was elected, you remember, he was talking about peace. He wasn't a neocon. He wasn't talking about war. He was talking very differently. And then 9/11 happened, and he changed. He changed. And he became a neocon, and it swept through the Republican Party. And now the vast majority of them, except for a lot, you know, the Tea Partiers, the original Tea Partiers, not the Tea Partiers who were co-opted by the neocons. Anyway, this is why we're in the mess we're in, and this is why I'm down on the Republican Party. Not the only reason, but it's one reason. Does that mean I'm a Democrat? Of course not. Don't be ridiculous. All right, I got 30 seconds. I don't even know how to wrap this show up, because this started when Henry Kissinger said that we need to put ships in the Gulf, protect, you know, the Strait of Hormuz back in, what, 1973? Protect our interests. It's stupid. Anyway, Christians need to be about peace. I'll talk to Christians next time, I guess. Tune in.
You've been listening to The Dean's List, an analysis of news, culture, and theological trends from a biblical worldview. To access archive broadcasts, go to trueworldview.net, where you'll find other helpful resources as well. Join us each week at 11:30 on Friday and Saturday, and noon on Sunday for The Dean's List.
And the gospel.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or iHeartMedia.